This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and welcome back to Reflections. This is episode 23, the Christmas special. Now, I know a lot of people who saw the title and the thumbnail are probably like, what in the world is, what is Yusha doing, you know? Just bear with me. Because we're in that time of the year. We're in the festive time of the year, the Christmas season, etc. And this is a very festive time of year. It's a very cozy time of year if you live in somewhere where it's cold and wintry, and the whole Christmas spirit and Santa Claus and giving gifts and... Even, you know, a lot of the Muslim community gets caught up in this whole time of the year and don't see many wrongs in practicing Christmas because it's been commercialized, etc. But I'm here to tell you today that Christmas, the true Christmas story, is very dark in its origins, and it traces many of its festive celebrations and holiday traditions back to Roman paganism, Northern European paganism, and it is something that Muslims should not be a part of in any way, shape, form, or fashion, because it is tantamount to associating a partner with Allah, which is the worst of sins, shirk. And it shouldn't be even practiced by Christians, because there's nothing Christ-like about almost any of it, which you will see. I have my whole little documented research that I've done over the years here, because I've done this talk a couple of times, but I've never done it in this fashion. And this is the point of reflections and talking about things that I feel need to be addressed, because when you see it starting to affect the Muslim community, and it's problematic. And yes, Christmas has become very commercialized. That is the, you know, the trait of capitalist societies, is to take anything that they can commercialize and make a whole bunch of money off of and do it. But I'm here to tell you today, brothers and sisters, we only have two festivals, Eid al-Fitr, which is at the end of Ramadan, and Eid al-Adha, which is at the end of Hajj. That's it. And we have every Friday, which is a small Eid. These are enough for us, because we don't want to take something which many of these traditions trace their origins back to paganism. So to celebrate these things is to give association in worship to other than the Creator, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is things that we, as the torchbearers of monotheism in the world today, Muslims should be on the forefront of denying practices that associate partners with the Creator God, Allah, as well as our Christians should see this as what it is and not celebrate it either. So what is the true Christmas story? What is the truth? It's December 25th. It's Jesus' birthday. Jesus was not born on December 25th. According to most accounts, he was born in warmer months. Warmer months. You know, if you look at the nativity story and how they followed the North Star, and Jesus was out in a manger in exposed in the middle of an open barn. This would not have happened in the winter. The Quranic story of the nativity of Jesus, the birth of Jesus, the date palm trees were ripe. This happens in warmer months, in the summer months. So this did not happen on December 25th. So how did Christmas... Christ's Mass, which is what it was. It was Mass celebrated on the night of Christmas, the night before Christmas, because day started at sunset and went to sunset. How did I end up being on December 25th? Well, Roman pagans first introduced a festival called Saturnalia, which was from December 17th until December the 25th, in which they would celebrate law and order. You know, the Roman Empire was very, very strict on that a society should be set up by law and order, that, you know, society should be ruled by a system of law and order, which we agree. But they would remind the people of this by once a year having this festival of Saturnalia, in where they would remove law and order. Law and order would be abolished. People could not be arrested. People could not be brought up on crimes. There was a popular movie who took this idea and ran with it called The Purge, you know, where you take away law and order to remind people when they see this lawlessness, when they see this chaos, they realize the importance of law and order and they are more ready to accept the terms of law and order when they see what the opposite of it is. One of the practices of Saturnalia is that every village would choose a person, and this would be known as the Lord of Misrule. This would be the Lord of Misrule. They would choose a person from their village, be it man or woman. And this person would be indulged gluttonously during this week. They would be fed the finest food, stuffed until they couldn't eat anymore. You know, they would commit lewd sexual acts with them. They would just, everything. They would live it up for that whole week. And then on December the 25th, the concluding day of the festival of Saturnalia, they would sacrifice this person. They would kill this innocent man or woman to sacrifice the Lord of Misrule, the Lord of Chaos, thus culminating the festival of Saturnalia. The ancient Greek writer and poet Lucian, in his dialogue entitled Saturnalia, describes some of the festival's observances at his time. Now, some of these will ring a bell to you, and you'll see that the origin of these seemingly simple and harmless things actually are very dark in their nature. He said some of these observances would be human sacrifice, as we talked about, widespread intoxication, going from house to house while singing naked. This would become modern-day caroling. This would become the precursor to modern-day caroling. Sexual misdeeds were licensed. Consuming human-shaped cookies. Because not everybody would get to murder this innocent man or woman at the end of the festival of Saturnalia, so they would bake human-shaped cookies and they eat them in kind of a celebration of the sacrifice. No, this gingerbread man did not come from the fairy tale story of Hansel and Gretel. It has a much darker, deeper, and more sinister origin. But you'll still see these gingerbread men pop up all the time during the Christmas time of year, during this festive time and holiday season. You'll see these gingerbread men all over the place, traces back to the festival of Saturnalia. In the 4th century CE, Christianity imported the Saturnalia festival, hoping to take the pagan masses in with it. Christian leaders succeeded in converting to Christianity large numbers of pagans by promising them that they would not have to give up their festival of Saturnalia as Christians. The problem was that there was nothing, I mean absolutely nothing, intrinsically Christian about Saturnalia. To remedy this, the Christian leaders named Saturnalia's concluding day, December the 25th, to be Jesus's birthday. We solved that problem. You see, these compromises were made. These compromises have been made before, and I talk about this with Pauline theology and Pauline Christianity, that Paul made so many compromises with introducing Roman paganism and Mithras and Mithraic religion into Christianity and making them seem to be one and the same, thus converting many Romans and many pagans over to Christianity. So these further concessions were minuscule in regards to that. So these concessions have been made time and time again throughout the history of Christianity. Christians had little success, however, in refining the practices of Saturnalia in the beginning. As Stephen Nissenbaum, a professor of history at the University of Massachusetts, writes, in return for ensuring massive observance of the anniversary of the Savior's birth by assigning it to this resonant date, the church, for its part, tactically agreed to allow the holiday to continue to exist as it had always been. The earliest celebrations of Christmas were celebrated by drinking, sexual indulgence, singing naked in the streets, caroling, etc. The Reverend Increase Mather of Boston observed in 1687 that the early Christians who first observed the Nativity on December the 25th did not do so thinking that Christ was born in that month, but because the heathens' Saturnalia was at that time kept in Rome, and they were willing to have those pagan holidays morphed into Christian ones. Because of its known pagan origin, the Christian sect known as the Puritans banned the celebration of this holiday. And in Massachusetts, where the Puritans kind of held sway, from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of Christmas was banned in the state of Massachusetts. However, Christmas is still celebrated by most Christians, even though it has very little to do with Christianity, has very little to do with Jesus Christ. What happened was they took pagan practices and morph them into Christian ones in order to gain power and influence over the pagans of Rome at the time. So this was for political power. was for political power. This was a reason. This was a calculated move that we morph these pagan holidays into a Christian one in order to bring in these pagan adherents of paganism in Rome into Christian adherents who would then pay tithes to the church, etc. So it's all about power and money and politics. That's just the way it went. In Northern Europe, many of the traditions that we now see as part of the Christmas festivities and might seem to be a bit harmless, they go back to paganistic roots as well, for people who never even heard of Jesus Christ. The pagans of Northern Europe celebrated their own winter solstice. They celebrated the shortest day of the year, the winter solstice, known as Yule. And you'll even hear that now in Christmas mention, Yuletide joy, Yuletide spirit, the Yuletide season, etc. This all goes back to paganism, way before people who had ever heard of Jesus Christ. And it was observed on the shortest day of the year in celebration of the sun god Mithras being born. So they celebrate on the shortest day of the year, the sun god Mithras being born. They would celebrate it on that day of the year. And it was customary to light a candle to encourage Mithras, the sun god, to reappear the next year. Huge Yule logs were burned in honor of the sun. The word Yule itself means wheel, which is a celebration of the sun disk. And the custom of kissing under the mistletoe is also part of this Yuletide paganism worship. Kissing under the mistletoe was like a fertility ritual. Now we see it in people's homes all over for the Christmas festive spirit. Put a mistletoe and, you know, you kiss under the mistletoe is supposed to mean something good. This traces all the way back to paganistic worships of fertility rituals. Holly berries were also considered to be food of the gods. The evergreen tree is the one symbol that unites almost all Northern Europe winter solstices. Live evergreen trees were brought into homes during the harsh winters as a reminder to the inhabitants of that home that, see, as this tree continues to live through these harsh winter months, the warm weather will come again and your crops will grow. Evergreen boughs were sometimes carried as totems of good luck and were present at weddings representing fertility. The Druids used a tree as a religious symbol, holding their sacred ceremonies while surrounding and worshiping these huge trees. All of this goes back and traces even the most harmless thing you might think of as mistletoe and gingerbread cookies and Yule, and these all go back to paganistic practices, which no person who believes in the one true God and in monotheism should have any partake in any way, shape, form, or fashion. In the year 350, Pope Julius I declared that December the 25th would be celebrated as Jesus' birthday. There is little doubt that he was trying to make as painless as possible the transition for pagan Romans who were the majority at the time. The majority. This is not long after the councils of Nicaea and Catholicism became the state religion and became the only accepted form of Christianity, that pagans were still the majority. So officially appointing Jesus' birthday on December the 25th was to help bring sway into people who were pagan at the time. The new religion went down a bit easier, knowing that their festivals and feasts would not be taken away from them. Christmas, which was known as Christ's Mass, like I said, they celebrated Mass on the evening before Christmas Day, and that became known as Christ's Mass, and it was shortened into Christmas. Most historians agree that it began in Germany, though Catholics and Lutherans still disagree about which celebrated it first. The earliest record of an evergreen being decorated in a Christian celebration was in 1521. And there's a verse actually in the Bible in Jeremiah that forbades this, to cut down of trees, bring them into your home, decorate them with tinsel and silver. This is actually a forbidden practice within the Bible itself. A prominent Lutheran minister of the time decried blasphemy, said this is blasphemous. You should more look to the tree of life, which is Christ. So we see that these practices, even though they might seem like, you know, they're harmless, we're just, you know, putting a tree in our house and decorating it, you know, we're just giving some gifts to each other, we're just celebrating the secret Santa at the office, and all of these things might seem very minuscule to you, but that's the whole point of the devil. The point of the devil is to try to make these things minuscule to you in an attempt to get you to practice them, knowing that these things in and of themselves are practices that were given in worship to other than the one true creator, Allah, of the heavens and the earth. So we stay away from these things. And may Allah grant us the ability to have the strength to stay away from these things. And, you know, I get asked a lot of times, especially by converts. This is a big convert issue this time of the year, because families here in the West especially get together on Christmas and have Christmas meal and et cetera. And I'm asked, can I go to these things? And I always tell these brothers and sisters that I judge this on case-by-case basis. You have to know your own relationship with your family. Are you able to go there and tell them that, look, I'm a Muslim. I don't practice these things. I'm not going to sing under the Christmas tree with you. I'm not going to help you decorate the Christmas tree. I'm not going to participate in Secret Santa and all of these other paganistic practices. But I will come and spend time with my family as long as I can exclude myself from these things. And you can even explain to them that none of this is Christian in the first place. This all goes back to paganism. You explain why you don't want to do it. And if they're fine with that, great. If they're not, then you probably, unfortunately, have to separate yourself from this, because keeping family ties is not more important than worshiping the Creator. Keeping family ties is extremely important in the religion of Islam. It's considered one of the major sins to cut off ties of kinship for no good reason. Now, if these ties of kinship are causing you to worship other than the one true God, you cut them off. You know, if you're in a relationship with you being abused by family, you cut them off. You know, your protection, the worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is foremost in your own personal protection. But if you're able to do this and avoid these things, then go for it. But that's a case-by-case basis. Now, with all of these practices, where did this dude Santa Claus come from? Where did this big jolly guy, this big old fluffy guy in a red suit and a big old white beard who rides a sleigh with 8 magical reindeer across the world in one night, climbing down people's chimneys, breaking into people's homes, where did he come from? How did this even happen? I'm going to tell you. Santa Claus, which is the Dutch for Saint Nicholas, named after a man named Nicholas. Nicholas was born in Parara, Turkey, in 270 CE. I'll wreck some of these names for sure. He was born in Turkey in 270 CE, and he later became the Bishop of Myra. He died in 345 CE on December the 6th. He was only named a saint in the 1800s. Nicholas was amongst the most senior bishops who convened the Council of Nicaea. Ding, 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 ding. This guy, Nicholas, had a huge role to play in the Council of Nicaea, which was, you know, the beginning of the destruction of the religion of Jesus Christ, which is the religion of monotheism and the worship of one God alone. This Council of Nicaea, I could spend hours on this, was convened in order to decide what Christians should believe, whether Jesus was God, part God, fully God, or not God at all and just a man. What books should be read and what should be known as canon. And that council came out with the understanding that Jesus was fully God and fully man. Therefore, the Trinity became doctrine, state doctrine. And the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which have their dubious origins and problematic origins, the Acts of the Apostles and the writings of Paul would be considered the New Testament. And that's what you read. And if you were a Christian and you read anything else, you were a heretic. The other books that were being passed around the time were considered heretical. And you could be found with them, you could be sentenced to death. So they enforced through power and through politics and through murder and the fact that Catholicism and the worship of Jesus as God in the flesh would be the state religion. This guy, Nicholas, was part and parcel of that. The text they produced portrayed Jews as children of the devil who sentenced Jesus to death. In 1087, a group of sailors who idolized Nicholas took his body. They took his bones from Turkey and moved it to Bari, Italy. There, Nicholas supplanted a female boon-giving deity called the Grandmother, or Pasqua Epiphania. So this became some weird, weird ritualistic practice with this guy. It became cultish. These people who revered Nicholas became a cult. And this boon grandmother used to go around filling children's stockings with her gifts. That was what she was known for. You know, the stockings that are hung on the stockings that are hung on the chimney with care. It's all part of the Christmas rhymes. This goes back to this weird practice of this Nicholas cult. The grandmother was ousted from her shrine at Bari, which became the center of the Nicholas cult. Members of this group gave each other gifts during a pageant they conducted annually on the anniversary of Nicholas's death, December the 6th. This would become the origin of giving gifts to each other on Christmas. The Nicholas cult spread north until it was adopted by German and Celtic pagans. It molded in, or it kind of merged in with German and Celtic paganism. These groups also worshipped a pantheon of gods, such as Woden, their chief god, and the father of Thor and Baldur and other gods. Woden had a long white beard, and he rode a horse through the sky one evening each autumn. When Nicholas merged with Woden, Nicholas shed his Mediterranean appearance, grew a beard, mounted a flying horse, and rescheduled his flight for December and donned heavy winter clothing. So this is the origination of the birth of Santa Claus, or St. Nicholas. In a bid for pagan adherence in Northern Europe, the Catholic Church adopted the Nicholas cult and taught that he did and should distribute gifts on December 25th and instead of December 6th. So they merged. So the Nicholas cult began by this guy, Nicholas, who helped establish the Council of Nicaea, wreck Christianity as we know it, or wrecked the religion of Jesus and what he taught as we know it. He would be then worshipped by some weird cult people who would spread this Nicholas cult religion throughout Germany and the Netherlands, and that would get blended in with Woden, who rode through the sky, and the Catholic Church, in order again to try to appeal to the pagans of that era and of that part of the world, said, "Look, we can merge this whole Woden Nicholas guy. Let's just reschedule his flight for December the 25th, and yes, we'll give gifts to each other, and we can bring in these pagans into Christianity as well." In 1809. The novelist Washington Irving, who most famously wrote Sleepy Hollow and Rip Van Winkle, wrote a satire of Dutch culture entitled The Knickerbocker History. The satire refers several times to the white-bearded flying horse riding Nicholas using his Dutch name, Santa Claus. Dr. Clement Moore, a professor at the Union Seminary, read Knickerbocker History in 1822, and he decided to write a poem about it. This poem was based on this character, Santa Claus, and the poem goes, "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there." So you can see how all of this evolved into these, you know, these seemingly harmless practices and poems and celebrations, all traced back to very dark origins of paganistic roots. And for people of monotheism, this is the thing that we abhor the most. That's why we stay away from it. But Moore innovated, and instead of Santa riding a horse, he gave him 8 reindeer, flying reindeer, and he descended through chimneys into people's house. Now, the Bavarian illustrator Thomas Nast almost completed the modern picture of Santa Claus. From 1862 to 1886, based on Moore's poems, Nast drew more than 2,200 cartoon images of Santa Claus for Harper's Weekly. Before Nast, St. Nicholas had been pictured as everything from a stern-looking bishop to a gnome-like figure in a frock. Nast also gave Santa a home on the North Pole, his workshop filled with elves and a list of the good and bad children of the world. All Santa was missing was his red outfit. Part of this also with Santa Claus is one of the things is that he knows that when you're sleeping, he knows when you've been, he knows when you are sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. It attributes to him powers of the unseen. Attributes to him powers of the unseen, which we stay away from, and for clear reasons. In 1931, guess who gave Santa his final form? You know who invented the modern-day Santa Claus as we know him, the jolly guy in the red suit? In 1931, the Coca-Cola Corporation contracted the Swedish commercial artist Hadden Sundblom to create a Coke-drinking Santa. They wanted to commercialize Santa Claus. Sundborn modeled his Santa on his friend Lou Prentice, chosen for his cheerful, chubby face. The corporation incented that Santa's fur-trimmed suit be bright Coca-Cola red. And Santa was born, a blend of Christian crusader, pagan god, and commercial idol. There you have it. That is the origin of Santa Claus, also tracing its roots back to pagan origins. So you can see, brothers and sisters, an audience, all of this traces its roots back to things that we as Muslims do not want to be involved in any way, shape, or form or fashion. This is the real Christmas story. The real Christmas story traces its roots back to Roman paganism, the fester of Saturnalia, lawlessness, depravity, sacrifice, false god worship. Woden became Santa Claus through St. Nicholas, and Coca-Cola turned him into a commercialized idol. These are things we just don't do them. And there's a reason why. And you should know the reason why. And I'm giving it to you as clearly as I can. Now, as we close, as we bring this to a wrap, the true Christmas story, I want to just read out the nativity story. And this is for anybody who might come across this who's not a Muslim. And if you've made it this far, I applaud you. Hope you've enjoyed it. If not, let me know in the comments. I want to read to you the true nativity story as it is recounted in the Quran. Because when I first read the Quran in 1998, before accepting Islam, reading this nativity story, you know, was one of the things that just kind of filled my heart with joy and faith about this book, the Quran. And I implore you to go and read it for yourself. This is the true nativity story as recounted by the Quran. So these words are the English interpretation of the very words of the creator of the heavens and earth in the Quran. And it says, and mention when the angel said, O Mary, indeed Allah has chosen you and purified you and chosen you above all of the women of the world. O Mary, the mother of Jesus, be devoutly obedient to your Lord and prostrate and bow with those who bow. That is from the news of the unseen which we reveal to you. And this is speaking to Muhammad. And you were not with them when they cast their pins as to which of them should be responsible for Mary. Nor were you with them when they disputed. And mention when the angels told Mary, O Mary, indeed Allah gives you good tidings of a word from him, whose name will be the Messiah, Jesus, the son of Mary, distinguished in this world and in the next, and among those who are brought near to God. He will speak to people from the cradle, and in maturity he will be of the righteous. She said, My Lord, how will I have a child when no man has touched me? The angel said, Such is the way with Allah. He creates what he wills. When he decrees a matter, he only needs to say be, and it exists. And he will teach them writing and wisdom and the Torah and the gospel. And make him a messenger to the children of Israel, who will say to them, Indeed, I have come to you with a clear sign from your Lord, in that I designed for you a bird from clay, and that I breathe into it, and it becomes alive by the permission of Allah. This was one of his miracles. He breathed into a clay figure of a bird that he made, and it became alive. And I cure the blind and the leper, and I give life to the dead by the permission of Allah. And I inform you of what you eat and what you store in your houses. Indeed, that is a sign for you, if you are but believers. And I have come confirming for you that which was before me, the Torah, and to make lawful to you some of the things that were before but forbidden to you. And I have come to you with a sign from your Lord, so fear Allah and obey me. Indeed, Allah is my Lord and your Lord, so worship him. That is the straight path. This is in chapter 3 of the Quran, verses 42 through 51. And next, and mention, O Muhammad, in the book, the story of Mary, when she withdrew herself from a family to a place towards the east. And she took in seclusion from them a screen. Then we sent to her our angel, and she represented himself to her as a well-proportioned man. She said, I seek refuge from the most merciful from you. Because she was afraid of, you know, like he's approaching her, she doesn't know him. If you should fear Allah. He said, I am only a messenger from you, from the Lord of all creation, to give you the news of a pure boy. She said, how can I have a boy when no man has ever touched me, nor have I ever been unchaste? He said, this is the will of God. He says, it is easy for me, and I will make him a sign for the people and a mercy from us, and it is a matter that is already decreed. So she conceived him, and she withdrew with herself to a remote place, and the pains of childbirth drove her to the trunk of a date palm tree. She said, oh, I wish that I had died before this and was in oblivion forgotten because of the pain. But he called her from below and said, do not grieve. Your Lord has provided beneath you a stream. And shake towards you the trunk of the date palm tree. It will drop upon you fresh ripe dates. So eat and drink and be contented. And if you see anybody from amongst humanity, say to them, indeed, I have vowed to the most merciful abstination, so I will not speak to anyone. Then she brought him to her people carrying him. They said, "Oh, Mary, you have certainly done an evil, unprecedented thing," because she didn't have a husband. She was a virgin. "Oh, sister of Aaron, your father was not a man of evil, nor was your mother unchaste." She pointed to the child and said, they said, "How can we speak to one who is a child in the cradle?" Jesus then spoke. This was his first miracle according to the Quran. "Indeed, I am the servant of God. He has given me the scripture and made me a prophet. He has made me blessed wherever I go and has enjoined upon me prayer and charity as long as I am alive. And he has made me dutiful to my mother and has not made me a wretched tyrant. And peace is on me the day that I was born, the day that I shall die, and the day that I will be raised alive. That is Jesus, the son of Mary, a word of truth about which they are in dispute. It is not befitting that God has a son, exalted is he above this. When he decrees an affair, he only needs to say be, and it is. Jesus said, indeed, Allah is my Lord and your Lord, so worship him. That is the straight path. Then factions differed concerning him from amongst themselves. So woe to those who turn to disbelief from the scene of the tremendous day of judgment. How clearly will they hear and see on the day that they come to us, but the wrongdoers on that day will be in clear error. And warn them of the day of regret, when the matter will be concluded, and yet they are in a state of heedlessness and they do not believe. Indeed, it is we who will inherit the earth and whoever is on it, and to us they will be returned. And this is in chapter 19, named after the mother of Jesus, chapter Mary, in the Quran, verses 16 through 40. That is the beautiful nativity story that is laid out in the Quran. Without the Christmas trees and mistletoe and Yuletide and gingerbread and all of that weird stuff. Just purely the story of Jesus coming into this world as a prophet and a messenger of God to bring people back to worshiping him alone upon true, pure monotheism, to worship the one true creator alone, and therefore celebrating his birth, which didn't happen on December 25th, but to celebrate his birth by introducing practices that worship gods other than the one he was sent to this earth to worship and to teach other people to worship is of the deepest forms of blasphemy and treachery. So we avoid these things, Muslims. And anyone else who's watching this, this is the reason why Muslims nor Christians or anybody who believes in pure monotheism should worship or should celebrate these paganistic festivals of Christmas, because this is the true Christmas story, and it's dark and it's weird and it's deep and it's been commercialized, and Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus, as you know him today, who was a big fat jolly red man who flies around the world in one night. And come on, parents, we know better than this. But brothers and sisters, this is the true Christmas story. Hopefully you can spread this to as many people as you want. Share this with anybody that you know that might be involved in celebrating Christmas festivals or whatnot. Explain to them why we don't do this. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. I look forward to seeing you guys going on, what is it, the 14th? I look forward to seeing you guys in the new year, the next episode of Reflections, because after this one, I'm in 12 days, I'm heading over to the UK to film some charity spots for One Ummah Charity, who I stand by very heavily and support their projects and things that they do around the world. So I'm going over there to film some charity spots for them and do some other things, and I'll be back the first week of January, and that's when we will release the next episode of Reflections. Where it goes and what we talk about, I don't know. You just have to tune in every week to see. It could be this. It could be it's a mixed bag. It's whatever I want to talk about and whatever I feel needs to be addressed. The new project, Yusha Evans Coaching, is going better than I could have thought. I've only pushed it that one time in one episode and a couple of social media posts, and you know, we've been filling up quite regularly. We have booked out days. So if you are interested in getting your coaching session, your counseling session, your therapy session with me, please click on the link below. It's always in the link, yushevenscoaching.com. And if you're interested in seeing what that is about and you didn't see the last episode, go back and watch the last episode of Reflections, episode 22, where I put it into detail and into length. As always, I close this off by saying I love all of you for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. May Allah grant you peace in your hearts, peace in your homes, peace in your minds, and peace in your souls. And we'll see you on the next one. Stay away from that Christmas stuff. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.